project is a collaborative project between the public health program at Virginia Tech, which involves a number of students, and also with the local health departments at the New River Health District, and as well as the regional healthcare system, which is the Carilion Clinic in Southwest Virginia. So the objective of the study objective is primarily to conduct cost-effective analysis of infectious disease programs. In this case, we are looking at three different infectious disease outbreaks, pertussis, tuberculosis, and fungal meningitis, and do a comparative evaluation on the program from the epidemiological perspective as well as from the economic perspective. So this is where we are located at. So this is in Virginia. We are located at in the southwest corner up here. So this is where we are, the New River Valley. And there are 35 health districts in Virginia, and New River Health District is one of them. So the first outbreak is pertussis, which took place in 2011. And pertussis is primarily caused by the bacteria Bacillus pertussis, and the symptoms include the whooping cough, fever, and the airborne transmission. The incubation period is the same as the latent period of around 7 to 10 days, followed by an infectious period of 21 days. We do have a vaccine. We have a trivalent vaccine that's protective against not only pertussis, tetanus, and diphtheria. Thereby, with the introduction of the vaccine, we have had a 93% decline in the incidence of pertussis in this country. So is that good enough? It will be good enough as long as we are able to bring down the outbreak to elimination. And in order to eliminate an outbreak, we'll have to basically bring down the R0 value, which is the average number of secondary cases caused by the primary case in a societal population. And as long as the R0 is less than 1, we can eliminate a disease. If it is larger than 1, we'll have an outbreak. And if it is around 1, we are going to have an endemic. And for total eradication, we need an R0 to be 0. Which has happened only with two diseases so far, which is basically smallpox and rinderpest. So in the case of pertussis, we are looking at an R0 value of around 14 to 16, which basically accounts for roughly a herd immunity of around 92 to 94%, which means that if you do vaccinate anywhere between 92 to 94% in any community, then you can potentially eliminate pertussis in that particular community. So what has been happening? So in the case of this DTP vaccine, the trivalent vaccine, the vaccination coverage in 49 states so far is still below the herd immunity threshold. There's only one state up here, Nebraska, which is actually above the herd immunity threshold. And Virginia is somewhere up here, and it's also less than the herd immunity threshold. And not only that, all the states that are basically here to the left that you see up here, within the from 2006 to 2011, the vaccination coverage actually has gone down. And these are states that you see to the right, the coverage has gone up, but except for Nebraska, all the other states are still below the herd immunity threshold, which means our R0 value is now larger than 1, which means we should expect an outbreak. It should not be a surprise. It's just when it's going to take place. So when you look at the pertussis outbreaks that have taken place in Virginia from 2007 to 2011, there has been a number of outbreaks. It's just when it's going to happen. And in 2011, we had as many as 13 outbreaks, and here we are basically analyzing one of those outbreaks that took place. In a small community, primarily focused on a private school, where the vaccination coverage was 0. Thereby, it's just a matter of time before an outbreak will take place. And in this particular community, there are 72 cases primarily affecting the children in that community. So the New River Health District, basically, their intervention program included first the health education campaign, followed by vaccination campaigns, both at the school as well as in the community. Thereby, to implement this particular program, there's a corresponding cost associated with the program, and of course, there's a corresponding benefit associated with implementing this particular program, compared to, in this case, not intervening at all, which will be the control program. So the cost for this particular program is accounted basically from the local health department, the clinical cost, as well as the vaccine cost. And these are the different sources from which basically you collect the different costs associated with this particular program. And so the health department cost, the clinical cost, and the vaccine cost. And once you add up all of those costs, we are looking at a total cost of around $45,000. That's with respect to the cost. So how do you measure the epidemiological effectiveness? That's measured using disability-adjusted life years, which is a mix of years of life loss due to premature mortality, and years of life loss due to disability. Okay? In essence, what does one tally mean is that it equals one lost year of healthy life. Tally is a good metric, or relatively it's a good metric, being instead of trying to look at incidence, prevalence, morbidity, mortality, you can encapsulate all of this into one objective metric. And not only that, we can use this one metric to compare the impact across different diseases as well. So how do we estimate this? Or let me showcase it with one example. Say, for example, at roughly, say my life expectancy is around 70 years. But instead, say I die at the age of 60, which means from 60 to 70, that's my years of life lost due to premature mortality. That's 10 years of life lost, okay? And let's presume at the age of 50, I actually say become blind. And the disability rate associated with blindness is roughly around 0.2. So if I'm going to live 10 years with blindness, that's like losing 2 years of life due to blindness and leading 8 years of healthy life. So in essence, that's going to account for 10 years of life lost due to premature mortality and 2 years of life lost due to disability, which is in this case blindness. In essence, so even though my life expectancy is 70 years, it's like leading 58 years of full healthy life and losing 12 years because of disability and premature mortality. Okay. So that's what, again, this diagram is again just to reinforce the fact, because it's the metric that we are going to keep using over and over. So in the case of pertussis outbreak, the years of life lost due to premature mortality was estimated roughly around 4.3 years, and years of life lost due to disability was estimated to roughly around 1.7 years. Thereby, a total of around 6 dallies were accounted for, and the total cost of intervening in this outbreak was roughly around $45,000. Thereby, the incremental cost effectiveness ratio is roughly around $7,500 per dally averted. So that's in the case of pertussis outbreak. The next one we are looking at is a tuberculosis outbreak that basically primarily took place in a jail environment. And tuberculosis is caused by the bacteria, Mycobacterium tuberculosis. The symptoms are respiratory, it's again airborne transmission. Roughly 1/3 of the world are infected with latent TB, which is asymptomatic and non-infectious, while TB disease is actually symptomatic and infectious. So among the people who do get infected, a good proportion of them actually clear the bacteria without any further progression of the disease or even the infection. The ones who are unable to clear them, they are the ones who actually get latently infected. And among the folks who do get latently infected, some proportion of them actually get active TB disease, which is a symptomatic and infectious stage of TB infection. Okay? So in essence, if you do get latent infection, roughly around 5% will actually progress to active TB disease within 2 years of infection. There's another 5% who will actually progress to active TB disease within their lifetime. The remainder, 90%, will never actually progress from latent TB infection to TB disease in their lifetime. Okay? But in the presence of HIV co-infection, the risk of infection or progression from latent infection to TB disease goes by around 10% every year, which is why we kind of have the popular saying with HIV epidemic, basically living with HIV but dying of TB, because TB is the highest co-infection related mortality among HIV positive infections. Okay. So this particular TB outbreak took place in New River Valley Jail. It's just one case, and it was a HIV TB co-infected case, and he did have around a 6-month history of TB symptoms, and he did ultimately was referred to treatment, which took place around for both TB and HIV treatment as well. But due to his presence up there, in a jail situation where it's a kind of we have an overcrowded environment, we are looking at a population of around close to around 1,000 inmates. And we do have around 50 to 60 inmates basically turn over every week. And we are looking at employees of around 200 employees in that particular environment. Thereby, there could be potential for other folks who could have been exposed because of this just one particular case. And for folks who are exposed to latent infection, in this particular case, we do have a 3-month treatment just once a week with isoniazid and rifampicin, and it's a directly observed therapy, which was much better during this time compared to just before that. The protocol was basically 6 months of daily dosage of this particular treatment. And that was a lot more difficult to implement compared to this particular program. So how many among the inmates were tested? There are around 35 inmates who did test positive, and there are 21 staff who were tested positive for latent TB infection, and they were recommended treatment, but it's up to them to take it or not. So ultimately, 28 inmates did take it, and 17 completed, and among the staff, around 10 took it. So in order to basically simulate this particular spread, so in the case of a TB, among the susceptible individual can get exposed. This is the latent TB phase. And then some of them will actually progress to the infectious stage. And you can also look at in this particular case of present population, there's a proportion of susceptibles, a proportion of exposed individuals, which is latent TB infected individuals. And in this case, just one particular case was actually infectious, who could be infecting more other susceptible individuals. See, there's a corresponding, it's a differential equation model, or it's also called the system dynamics model. Okay. And we adapted the SCA, which is susceptible exposed infectious model, to basically simulate TB. Here we capture the lifetime latency, here's a short latency, and here's a long latency. And all these are basically latent TB stages. And here is where we basically have the active TB disease. And once you do diagnose, if you do get referred, then you could basically go to the treatment phase. And once you do get recovered, you actually become susceptible. There's no total recovery from TB. Rather than saying recovery, like you do get recovered, but you don't actually become immune to TB. You can get reinfected in the future. Okay. And these are the corresponding equations. And when you do the simulations, this is the case of the base case scenario where there's no TB screening. And this is the intervention scenario with TB screening. And we do see a benefit in basically doing for TB screening. And in this particular case, the jail facility did change the program. Right now, they do screen every inmate at the time of entry for TB in the intervention program. So the cost associated with this particular program actually turned out to be cost saving by implementing this program. So it saves roughly around $15,000 per dialysis admitted. Thereby, it should be a straightforward recommendation. But the prime limitation of this particular study is that we didn't look into the side effects that could be encountered. Because by taking latent TB treatment, you could also have liver failure, which is much expensive to treat. So taking that into account, we are not sure whether it still be a cost saving program or not. That's a limitation. So the last one that you're looking at is basically fungal meningitis outbreak. And here, it's caused by the fungus. This particular fungus that basically that was among the contaminated injections, which is basically produced at New England Compounding Center. And the symptoms included headache, stiff neck, and fatigue. And it's not an infectious disease, but it's a kind of similar to foodborne outbreak, but a single source and spread to multiple states. And there are 23 states that did receive this contaminated lots, and among 20 states did have confirmed cases, around 751 cases, and there are 64 deaths. And in the case of Virginia, there are 54 cases and 5 deaths. So the two facilities that are that basically administer this contaminated lots, both are located in the New River Valley region. So one in exactly New River Valley, the other one in the adjoining Roanoke Valley. So that's where located. So in this case, this is a surveillance process that was used by the local health department. So these are the two facilities, and the health department basically contacted all the patients who were administered these contaminated lots. And if they did exhibit any symptoms, then they are referred to the clinical care. If they didn't exhibit any symptoms, they were still followed up every 10 days for the next 3 months, and if they did exhibit any symptoms during this follow-up period, then they are referred to clinical care. So the corresponding hours and these are the corresponding costs associated with this particular program. And this accounts to roughly around 100 dialysis averted for a total cost of $30,000 for incremental cost of a ratio of around $300 per dialysis averted. So where is the story going along? So we do have three different diseases, which are completely different symptoms and diagnosis, etc. But how do you objectively compare the epidemiological effectiveness and the cost associated in basically implementing these prevention interventions? So we do have one uniform metric. So we have the cost in dollars and epidemiological effectiveness basically measured in dialysis averted. Thereby, now we can compare against different programs across just one metric. So what you want to do going, this is done retrospectively, what you'd like to do moving forward is to do it prospectively before you implement programs across different programs and use this as one objective metric to prioritize among different programs. And one limitation of this is that this is looking from the local health department perspective. We haven't looked into other perspectives, the clinical perspective. So in order to make it more objective, one perspective that should be added is a societal perspective. Because sometimes even though the local health department may actually put in higher amount of cost, it may actually lead to a downstream lower cost at the societal perspective. And sometimes the local department may actually put in less cost, but that can lead to higher cost at the societal perspective. So this needs to be balanced out from local health department as well as societal perspective before you actually make an objective decision-making process. We do not necessarily recommend and say any of these programs are cost-effective or not cost-effective. But if you do want to, would like to thresholds, these are the different thresholds used by different countries. For United States, we do not necessarily use a threshold, but the United States Institute of Medicine, they do have recommended a threshold of roughly around, if it costs roughly around $10,000 per tally averted or less, then it's highly recommended. If it costs less than $10,000, less than $100,000 per tally averted, it's recommended. And if it costs more than $100,000 per tally averted, not recommended. So these are the students who actually primarily led the study. So Karina applied for pertussis, Jennifer Samuels for tuberculosis, and Nargis Dorotash, who's actually here for fungal meningitis. And thanks for the funding agency, primarily from the National Coordinating Center for Public Health and Systems Research and the Robert Johnson Foundation, and as well as the session organizers and you, the participants, as well. And thank you very much.